Imbalance IT Solutions provides a unique consulting approach to transform your organization's data, cybersecurity, and hybrid cloud environments. We would like to welcome you to our podcast series we call The Balancing Act, discussing complex digital transformation. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello, listeners out there. This is Ryan O'Halloran, VP of Security Strategy here at Imbalance IT, bringing you episode 8 of the Balancing Act podcast series titled Hunting Adversaries with People Plus AI. Today, we're going to discuss defending our businesses from the world's most sophisticated threat actors using not only AI, but more importantly, the most experienced threat hunters who gather criminal intelligence proactively and then respond to novel attacks. I'm lucky to have here with me my special guest, Jeremy Smolik. Jeremy is America's Director of Solutions Architecture at CrowdStrike, a cybersecurity company that's focused on stopping breaches with software protections for endpoints, cloud, and identities, and backed by the leading intelligence research team. Jeremy, thank you for joining me. Let's kick off here maybe with a little bit of background about you and your mission at CrowdStrike.
Ryan, very happy to be here. Thanks to the Imbalance IT team for allowing me the opportunity to come and speak on this podcast. Really excited about the opportunity. Good morning to you all. As Ryan said, Jeremy Smolik, I'm the Director of Solutions Architecture here at CrowdStrike for the Americas. My goal, my mission is the same as CrowdStrike's. We stop breaches. My mission as a solutions architect leader is really to empower our partners to extend that mission to their customers, right? How can we partner together on advisory and managed services to continue to fight that good fight? One team, one fight is our mantra here. I've been at CrowdStrike almost 7 years now, come from a network engineering and telecommunications background myself, where security was largely firewall based. But here we are talking about the world's most sophisticated adversaries, targeting all of our applications and endpoints every day.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, one of the things I'd like to get into off the cuff is there's obviously a lot of security companies out there, and CrowdStrike has been very dominant in the space. And I think part of that, which not everyone realizes, is when they look at detection and response, they always think software and SOC guys. They don't necessarily think enrichment. And what I mean by enrichment is people, the people on top. And I think that that's one of the things that CrowdStrike does a little bit differently. It's a different approach, right? And probably one of the reasons it's been successful of a platform as it is today. Can you tell us a little bit about how CrowdStrike approaches security differently through people and threat hunting?
I think you're spot on already, Ryan. CrowdStrike was founded as a incident response and services organization, as well as a threat intelligence provider. So that's really what put our name on the map, and the tool that your customers install, the tool that all of our customers enjoy. We built that to deliver those services first. So, you know, unlike some legacy competitors out there who built a product and then constantly played catch up with the bad guys, we started from that adversary-informed detection, response, and intelligence first, and built the product to deliver protection against what we saw the bad guys doing. So that's really our threat hunting philosophy, is that things should be proactive and they should be adversary-informed. We take a very scientific approach to proactive threat hunting. We use a massive data lake and data ingest, trillions of events per day coming from our customers. We look for the trends and the outliers, and then we test our hypotheses on a daily basis, on an almost per minute basis. Hundreds of thousands of leads getting investigated and tested. And then we're cycling in retrospective indicators as well, right? So new things that our threat intelligence teams discover, new things that we discover in an incident response scenario, we're constantly evolving those methodologies and testing and retesting those methods. So I think what's key for CrowdStrike, there's a lot of data out there. There's a lot of AI companies out there. Lots of our competitors, lots of security vendors have a ton of data, and they have AI analytics backing that. I think the differentiator for CrowdStrike is that human element. We have threat hunters with a ton of experience literal like decades of combined experience. Same with incident responders, right? They're out there fighting the bad guys every single day. And when we think about the way AI works, especially when you read some of the most recent releases about different AI technologies, there's always that element of like tagging and classifying data that requires human interface, right? Anytime you've clicked on a CAPTCHA that's asking you to, identify which pictures have bikes or streetlights, you're actually training an AI model. So we've got that expertise in-house, right? We are tagging and analyzing and classifying the data that we ingest with every incident, every investigation, every new piece of intelligence. And that's really what sets us apart, right? Is being able to tag and classify that data to make the analytics better over time.
That's super interesting. And behind the reconnaissance phase where it all starts, there's a motivation, right? You got the wicked panda to your side there. These actors have a motivation. So it's really interesting to see what they're motivated by, just to understand the likelihood that you will come in contact with them. I think that right there allows you to kind of zero in right on that little space and focus on that even more tailored, more intently, and kind of start creating even a community right amongst the CISOs and stuff out there to understand what is going on. That's huge, and then above people, which clearly is still very important. We see AI's got some problems. We need to train that. So we probably need to keep training cyber too. What would you say the most meaningful benefits of AI are today that enrich the traditional method? Because here's what happens. Everyone talks about it, right? And they may have had AI and machine learning for a long time, but they haven't done the they haven't had the phase two, right? The actual natural language processing and the things that are enabling our next generation of tech force and stuff. I'd be really curious today at the moment if we can double click into how CrowdStrike is using AI against novel threats right now.
Yeah, I'll actually answer that. I think you hit on two points there. Your previous point ties into this one as well. I think by and large, as simple as possible, CrowdStrike's trying to use AI to make everybody's jobs easier. The SOC analyst, the IT individual, whoever's behind the console, how do we level them up? How do we give them the advantage over the adversary by using the tools, the intelligence, and the AI models that we have? That could be something like you mentioned, right? Machine learning-based detection, simplifying things so that we're not running file scans and wasting a bunch of resources looking for a needle in a haystack. It could be behavioral analytics, right? And this is exactly, I think, what your previous point was talking about. How do we understand what motivations for what adversaries are targeting specific organizations, regions, geographies, technologies, whatever? How do we understand the techniques they're going to use? And then how do we figure out a way to identify those techniques, ultimately raise that detection and protection up to that console, and then make that analyst's life way easier so that the investigation is done informed by the understanding of that adversary's techniques. So we can start to automate not just the investigation and detection steps, but also some of the response steps, as well as things like reporting. At the end of the day, there's probably going to be a CISO or a leader or somebody saying, okay, are we good? How did we wrap this up? And everybody's favorite part of that game, of course, is writing the report and the post detection or resolution analysis. And that's really what we're trying to do is use the AI technologies to make better informed decisions about what the adversaries are doing, how to get that detection in a very quick manner in front of you, the analyst, the console, the administrator, and then how to wrap up that response in an automated fashion and provide that reporting to save you time. The bad guys are moving faster every day. They're utilizing AI-based techniques to help them be more efficient or effective. So we should be doing the same. And anybody who's not is at risk of being slower than the adversary.
I love your explanation there. I think one of the things that really kind of hits home for me, right, is we have ransomware as a service and all this stuff now where it's tiers of people with different skill sets that are operating together in very much a business-like operation, right? I think if that's enabling, those that aren't 10-year hackers to steal, right? You're enabling folks that are much less skilled to do as much damage. So we need to enable those our people, the defenders on the blue team, to be able to do the exact same thing, right? And I love that that use case for AI because for me, that's what's going on. The junior admin can do something as quick as the senior admin, right? The novel threat can be found because it's something different. Those things are really, I think the spirit of that in all the security technologies is really exciting. And then longer term, when we build this database, who knows what we'll be able to do with it for automation, right?
That's a really good point. If I may, I sat on an analyst panel a few years ago, and somebody asked a question of a well-respected industry leader. She's been responsible for starting several companies and bug bounty programs and things like that. And somebody asked her point blank, "Are you concerned that adversaries are getting more sophisticated and harder to detect?" And her response was, "No, I'm actually concerned that they're getting dumber and more opportunistic." Right. So I think that underscores your point. There's a lot of tools, and the democratization of those tools are enabling new adversary groups. Splinter cells of previous groups to be more effective. And I think the end result of both AI and threat hunting needs to be bidirectional communication and collaboration. I think you made a really good point that this is a business. It is literally, vendor and partner relationships for a lot of these adversaries, and we should treat things the same way. And even some of our largest customers trust, our threat hunting and managed services and others, partner managed services to have their back, right? To give them that, either that staff augmentation or that additional visibility, someone to look over the shoulder of the data, so to speak. And we need to adopt that same nature, and we need to use those AI tools to help speed up that process.
Definitely. Yeah, it's interesting how we're enabling those that would have never been capable, and just getting more, like you said. So the way to combat that, right, is to when people say fight AI with AI, I think we kind of just described what that really means. At least to me, that's the most concrete meaning for that. I want to talk about modernized threats, right? Because the other thing I think that's happening is folks are starting to understand how identities and their compromises are causing the length of their recovery times, the lack of confidence in incident response, the elongated response that they haven't protected it before, during, and after the attack, right? Like they would data typically, or have a rapid way to respond to that. And in a lot of these cases, you don't even get the chance for your endpoint to trigger an alert anymore, right? You have the most common things, that were traditionally used, right, is people think antivirus and email security, right? And firewalls, of course. But, we think about email. Okay, I got a secure email gateway. Well, now account takeovers and AI and all this other stuff, it's legitimate things, not going to block it, right? QR codes, all this other fancy stuff. Now, with identities, you compromise an actual account, you're living off the land. You can use the tools that are there, not going to trigger any alarms, right? I think there's a wake up for that right now, that was kind of always the case. But since we went hybrid with SSO, we never fixed the legacy back on-prem to match, right? Get parity with privileged access management and threat detection and response for identity, right? Stuff like that. How do we beat the velocity of the CrowdStrike golden metric, the breakout time window? And if you could tell us a little bit about what that is, because another big thing for listeners out there, if you're not aware, that threat intelligence comes in the form of a report, and CrowdStrike has some of the most meaningful metrics that you could use in your security risk indicators and understanding how much time you actually have to respond. So, Jeremy, if you would take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, Ryan, thanks for mentioning the global threat reports. CrowdStrike's reports have a lot of good insights on attacker trends and behaviors. And one of the things that we underscore is that breakout time and how quickly adversaries can move from that initial compromise to ubiquitous access around the environment. Unfortunately for us, that breakout time continues to come down. When I started, criminal actors, which CrowdStrike refers to as the spider groups in our intel teams, that took about an 8 hour period. So you had about a day to understand what the adversary was doing. Fast forward a few years, that breakout time has come down to about an hour, with some of the fastest breakouts we've seen in a matter of seconds, quite literally. So it's become a race to understand where that adversary is and where they're going. And I
SOC
think
analyst, I'm sorry to a SOC analyst couldn't even finish a query in that amount of time.
spot on, right?
They could be
We're
proactively literally imagining the future, and they wouldn't be able to get that information before the compromise, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And as a result, we're reacting to, every log, every alert, every new a piece of information that's gathered in or ingested and indexed and shows up on that dashboard. We're basically chasing the adversary around the environment. And what we found, to your point, I think we should all take a moment to congratulate ourselves. Endpoint detection has gotten to the point where adversaries don't want to use malware anymore. So the tools have gotten effective, the SOC teams have gotten effective at stopping malware. But if you think about, the definition of an APT, the P stands for persistent. They're not going to give up. They're going to pivot to identity-based techniques, to living off the land techniques. And that's precisely what we've observed over the past couple of years and what those reports find. We're not the only ones saying this, right? Our peers and even competitors in the industry will tell you, 80% of all breaches start with, a stolen password or social engineering or a phished password or something like that. Adversaries are literally walking into the front door, or, gaining access to machines, based off of a purchased set of credentials on the dark web, right? They're buying administrator credentials and then they're running around the environment unchecked, mimicking legitimate activity using built-in tools in the operating system, right? Command prompts, PowerShell scripts, shell scripts in Linux, that kind of thing. And they're not deploying malware. They're actually deploying other legitimate tools, remote management tools, right? Things that people rely on for remote access to a device, to
Shells in
continue.
memory that don't install, and
Yeah,
and one of the
no
scary,
artifacts on disk, exactly.
oh man, and Jerry, one of the things that scares me about this, and I think this hits home for whatever with a lot of the business folk that aren't as technical. What used to happen with ransomware is somebody would hit you and then they'd try to get the money and get out. So they'd wait till like a holiday weekend, right? It's Labor Day. They put it out there on Friday. They try to squeeze you by Monday so you can get back to business. They can get paid, salute, and move on. What this means is now they're in there for months. So that means there's months of backups that are no good.
Yes. So our traditional defenses and controls, we got to rethink that process, right? We're used to saying, okay, I stopped the ransomware. But, to your point, if I stop the ransomware, I can't prove that data hasn't been exfiltrated already. I can't prove that adversary stole things. I have to now walk back their attack path to understand, how did they get those credentials? What credentials did they create in the process? Did they stand up their own infrastructure within the environment? And all of that stuff happens typically, unfortunately, in an incident response engagement, right? We stop the ransomware, but things keep showing up. How do we do this full-blown incident response and understand how the adversary got in, how they stayed there, what other sets of credentials and trust did they create, and did they steal any data in the process? Our goal should always be to understand the full breadth of that attack path, from credential access, from reconnaissance, from even the credentials being advertised on the dark web
Yeah,
in the first place.
truly proactive, right? Rapid recovery is, yes, it's important. Vaulting, it's important. All these other things, but that is not proactive.
It's very reactive.
That's reactive last resort, possibly scorched earth, right? So to me, that's where, on the identity side, right, that's the real front door. So that's where we need to monitor now and make that pivot. We still got to cover the endpoint, right? But would you say that identity security, just like network, right? Microsegmentation, what's conditional access, behavioral, recovery, all those things. Would you say it's basically non-negotiable in 2025? I mean, this has been like the top three items for most CISOs is to address this second attack vector and really focus on it like they used to primarily in a
Absolutely.
different area.
It's essential. If you look at our mid-year threat hunting report, half of everything an adversary does is identity-based. They get into an organization, they do 10 things, five of them are identity-based techniques. We need to understand the risks in our organization, where the hygiene gaps are, and we need to create those barricades, essentially, right? We need to raise the cost of doing business and put obstacles in their path, in the adversary's path, to slow them down without slowing down regular business. We need to examine the trust that we have in place already. And I'm going to try to finish this segment or question without saying the word zero trust, because I know that could be nebulous to a lot of organizations.
The
But
listeners and I will forgive you.
yeah, exactly. The truth is we've built a lot of convenience into our processes that inherently trust, credentials, service accounts, administrators, that kind of thing. We need to start multi-factoring every single time there's privileged access. And there are tools out there that can help, with kind of policing who can do what, but there are very few tools. And I'll just throw a plug in there for CrowdStrike Identity Protection, who can actually act in line and look at those behaviors and block or challenge that user when something deviates, or just to create a simple policy that says anytime anybody does any administrator action, I need to have them two-factor or authenticate themselves. And we should be building that into our threat hunting and response as well. If there is a multi-factor reset anywhere in the environment, somebody resets their two-factor code, that's an immediate critical investigation, right? Because that's what the bad guys are doing, right? If we
Yeah,
look
what
at,
else are you going to do when the password is right?
yeah, exactly. We're
You
mimicking
need to know,
legitimate
hey,
activity.
this person logged from this different thing and this different signal with this different sentiment. And if we don't do that, we're not going to catch it, right? Not
Exactly. If we
not
can
up front.
challenge, right, if we can challenge them, we've slowed them down. We've given ourselves the advantage. We've burned those, stolen credentials, and that's really the goal is how can we continue to burn their tradecraft at every step so that they have to come up with something new, and that gives us that time advantage.
Awesome. And identities is obviously the lion's share, but the other vector, right, is misconfigurations in the cloud. Old school, just exploit a vulnerability, right? That's the other thing. Storage buckets made available publicly by accident, wrong permissions, unpatched systems, all those things. With cloud misconfigurations being abused to that level, where does cloud native security fit into this? Because to me, there's a realization that identities was in data was always a problem, and now all of a sudden with AI, we have to fix it. But then there's also a realization like, whoa, now that I'm in the cloud, when I really do cloud right and I break it out into microservices and all these other things, and then we start doing multi-cloud, this is complicated. I can't handle this. I need to normalize this, right? Is what I see. Can you talk a little bit about how CrowdStrike and the market in general is addressing that half? Because to me, those are the big ones, right?
Completely agree. And I think, again, tagging back to the report, you'll see adversaries are now aware of when they compromise a cloud resource, and they'll deliberately go after, the control plane, the administrator tools, the deployment tools, the software system configuration type tools within that cloud control plane to increase their footprint, right? And I think that's a big challenge because it's almost the shadow IT problem all over again. A few years ago, we had this issue with SaaS tools, right? Anybody was logging into any tool, and suddenly we found that there was data, critical data, intellectual property, trade secrets, whatever, sitting on a Box account in someone's,
Yeah, there's
personal.
caches of this everywhere.
Exactly. And
Yeah.
there was a data sprawl problem. We're having that same challenge, I think, within the cloud. I think we've quickly and rapidly migrated to the cloud, and there's constant back and forth about whose responsibility is it to control certain access or certain data flows. And that was easier when it was all inside the perimeter or our hybrid data center or perimeter data center. Now, what do we do when we're rapidly checking in changes constantly? If we're using agile development or some other methodology, we're constantly making changes to production applications. Those applications may have vulnerabilities, they may have misconfigurations. And I think really what the industry has largely focused on is the misconfiguration element first, right?
Posture management
Posture management, precisely.
for
And,
everything.
for everything, all encompassing. And what that translates to far too often, unfortunately, is, tool sprawl again. Right, customers are employing multiple tools. They're using stuff on, the various marketplaces and saying, "Well, this will do this. This will do this." Unfortunately, to your previous point, the more data we have, is actually just slowing that SOC down even more if we can't get those analytics tied together in an adversary-centric or adversary-first view. So, to your point, that cloud-native approach is really key, right? And without sounding like a commercial. CrowdStrike was born in the cloud, right? Everything that we do is microservices as well. So,
That's true.
being
For XDR, I mean, in storage buckets and stuff, you're basically the pioneer in that space. That's not an overstatement at all.
it turns out that because we're disrupting these businesses and partnerships all day long, we also have been targeted quite a few times, to say the least. So we've learned a few things about securing our own cloud. And some of the tooling that we've brought to market was actually our own in-house tooling first. And I think that's where the market needs to go, right? We have traditional endpoint protection prevention on one side, and then we have the hygiene and the posture management on the other. And I think the expectation is, if we can inform a customer about what's wrong, then we can go close those gaps. But I think any customer who's got a patch management process will tell you it's always a cat and mouse or whack-a-mole game, and they're constantly chasing something. So to me, the question becomes, how do we unify those two things? How do we incorporate protection, prevention, and real runtime prevention into that hygiene conversation? And that's what we do, right? It's all in the same data lake. It's all from an adversary-centric perspective. Again, who is going to target my organization? What misconfigurations or vulnerabilities are they going to exploit or attack? And then how are they going to gain access to that control plane? How do we detect that all in a single view, a single dashboard, draw that attack path and inform the customer on how to respond and automate that response in the future?
It's awesome. Jeremy, I know we're up at the clock here, and I couldn't appreciate your time today more. For
Likewise.
listeners on our way out, what would you say with all the data you've seen and the metrics, right, and all those other things, where would you say defenders should spend their time? Where should they focus right now, right? We talked like three different things: speeding up the data, right, maturing the identity, getting cloud native aware. Where would you start? I have my answer, but I'd love to hear your answer.
I'd love to hear your answer too. This has been a
Second.
good conversation. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Tune in next time. No, truthfully, we used to look at traditional things like mean time to detect and mean time to resolve. I think now we should be looking at the investigation window, right? How long does it take to get us the data we need to understand the full scope and breadth of the investigation? So it really, the key metric to me is, can we beat breakout time? Can we be faster than the adversary? And if your current tool set, it takes a half an hour to run that search, like you said, and if you can't have a conversation with your data using AI native language models to have those queries written for you, that kind of thing, those kinds of things are putting us at a disadvantage. And I would argue that we need a single platform approach to get all of that data, first and third party, into one place and create those automation tools. So the metric should be, can we accurately identify a risk and then quickly put in a block or a challenge in place? So it's not necessarily reacting to malware or a detection, but looking at the risk, whatever that may be. That may be identity hygiene, that may be exploitable vulnerabilities or high profile vulnerabilities both on-prem and in the cloud. And how do we create a sort of a metric around how can I create a policy to challenge that? How can I create ways to stop the spread across third parties? So if somebody's going to go access, cloud resources or SaaS resources, how do I continue to challenge them, using the technology ecosystem that we have? And ultimately, how do I automate that for the future so that I can measure my ability to react in time to those risks and not necessarily to the end result of those risks?
Perfect. Thank you. Your response was better than mine, so I'm just going to bite my lip.
Well,
Jeremy,
now you're leaving us hanging.
well, you hit on it. You hit on it totally. For me, real since we're on it, it's identities, in my mind, because obviously that's the primary, and that's keeps closing the window, and that's the proactive piece and things like that. When people start talking about zero trust, a lot of times I just think they start with networking and replacing VPN and micro segmenting, which is important, but I think you should do that second. So that's just, and then, like you said, that's how you do it more specifically, right? I mean, sharing and education too. I mean, it's really that, it's the continued kind of wake up mode. Jeremy, thanks for again for spending the time. Truly appreciate you. Imbalancing CrowdStrike listeners, we can significantly help reduce your risk, right, of breaches. Prepare you confidently to respond to a cyber attack. We appreciate your listening, and please come on back. We welcome you back for a new episode each month. And until next time, stay safe out there in the cyber world.
Inbalance IT Solutions wants to thank you for listening and invite you to join us for the next episode in our podcast series. Remember, Inbalance IT Solutions can help you transform your business's technology, and we welcome you to reach out to us for more information on our website at inbalanceit.com. See you on the next one.